More of Lake Effect Now, I'm Bonnie North. In the middle of a tree-lined, bird-filled block in Milwaukee's River West neighborhood stands a purple-trimmed Cream City brick house. While the house itself is interesting, what's in the basement is even more compelling. Down the basement stairs lives a collection of over 2,500 zines. Zines are generally self-published magazines and pamphlets, and they're primary source materials that document histories that usually have no other home. This collection is called QZAP, the Queer Zine Archive Project, and it's run by co-founders Milo Miller and Chris Wild. WUWM's Mayon Silver descended the stairs to the archive to find out more.
At QZAP, one of the things that we think about a lot is the vast array of queer stories that get told, and that get told exclusively in this sub rosa print format that don't get picked up in other media formats. And we think about this a lot, we talk about it a lot, but when you have access to more traditional forms of publishing or sort of mainstream media outlets, what you see when you see queer stories is you see, I would say, a fairly narrow view of what it means to be gay and lesbian, without a whole lot of talking about what it means to be bisexual, to be transgender. And a lot of that is, it's sort of based in capitalism, it's based in hegemony, and zines bust that wide open. And so we have all of these amazing stories that you don't see anywhere else. It's not in Girlfriends, it's not on the Logo channel. And, you know, it's, zines are kind of like StoryCorps, like what NPR plays on Fridays, you know, but it's in print format. And so that's what our collection really has become a lot about.
I want to know specifically queer zines, queer punk self-published zines. What is that all about?
We have a pretty comprehensive list on our website of what makes a zine queer, or how we identify something that is a queer zine versus a non-queer zine. And for us, it kind of breaks down in two ways. One is that it can be just about any zine made by somebody who self-identifies as being LGBTQ+. Because of that, we sort of have this broad scope of things.
What is the range of subjects? Like, you know, does it go from love stories to environmental activism to, you know, AIDS, you know, epidemic?
All of that. We have stuff on reproductive health. We have a zine that is one of my favorites called Interview with a Zombie, that is an interview with a zombie. Mm-hmm. We have stuff that is music oriented. We have stuff that is pop culture oriented, stuff that is punk or DIY, you know, zines about how to fix your bicycle tires, or how to, you know, we've got a bunch of cook zines, like, which are basically like cookbooks, but they're in zine format, you know, so how to make vegan mac and cheese or whatever, you know, so really all over the place. But then on the other hand, we have the idea that zines can have queer content and be made by non-queer people. And so sometimes we'll have folks who are more straight identified or heterosexual identified or however they want to do that, but they'll deal with content that we would consider to be queer in some way. So maybe they're talking about HIV/AIDS or sexual health. Maybe they're talking about mental illness and wellness in a way that is particularly queer. Maybe they're talking about queer politics. Maybe they're talking about broader sexual politics, you know. So in that way, those are sort of the two ways that we approach queer zines.
Okay, so have there been any zines that have just hit you that, like, lately that you just look at them? I mean, what do they look like? What do they feel like? That kind of thing.
And there's so many zines that we get, and there's so much that I loved. I started to pull some just to sort of show you.
Yeah, let's check them out.
Pulled a bunch of different stuff. Some of this is things that are very new to us. Some of this are sort of old favorites from around here. So I'm going to start with the old favorites and then move to the newer stuff. So Queers Read This was a manifesto that was created for the 1990 New York City Pride March. And it's this really sort of angry polemic that happened right in the middle of the AIDS crisis and right at the end of the first Bush administration. And it tears into Jesse Helms. It talks about how terrible healthcare was at the time, how terrible the anti-gay bigotry was, and sort of ramping up, especially coming from the Catholic Church and from Cardinal John O'Connor in New York City. And it's probably one of my favorite queer texts ever, so much so that I blew it up into a big art piece that we have hanging up here.
I see in the corner you've got a green framed window with black lettering, and that's basically the connection of this.
Yeah, so it starts with, "An army of lovers cannot lose. Being queer is not about a right to privacy. It is about the freedom to be public, to just be who we are. It means every day fighting oppression, homophobia, racism, misogyny, the bigotry of religious hypocrites, and our own self-hatred. And now, of course, it means fighting a virus as well, and all those homo haters who are using AIDS to wipe us off the face of the earth. Being queer means leading a different sort of life. It's not about the mainstream, profit margins, patriotism, patriarchy, or being assimilated. It's not about executive directors, privilege, or elitism. It's about being on the margins, defining ourselves. It's about gender and secrets and what's beneath the belt and deep inside the heart. It is about the night." And then it sort of goes on from there.
I mean, it's about as simple of a layout and a platform.
Yeah, so this is a reprint that was done in 2009. So somebody took the original text and reset it. Somewhere we have a copy of the original document, or a copy of the original document. And this was just created anonymously and handed out during the big New York City Pride March. So, you know, you have 500,000 people in New York at Gay Pride, and there's a whole bunch of angry queers going through passing this out. And like, it's just this really, really intense document. So this is one of our favorites down here, for sure. This is another one of ours. It's about making do-it-yourself sex toys. And because there's a real big crossover in zine community with do-it-yourself communities and this real desire to sidestep capitalism and consumerism in a lot of different ways. And so I feel like this is a really good representation of that. Like, it's super queer, it's sex positive, it's about do-it-yourself. And so it really is something that we sort of cherish and we talk about a lot.
And I see that this is kind of a funky neon green with some cool lettering. It says, the title is basically not able to be read on the radio,
right.
but I'm sure the content is interesting and looks like there's some illustrations and text here.
Yeah, and how to create harnesses and straps and
anything you could need.
Yeah, basically tools.
Tools.
So the next one that I pulled is kind of one of my personal, I don't want to say obsessions, but I'm super, super curious about it because it's GMS Headbanger is the title, and it's the newsletter for the Chicago Gay Metal Society. And from the best that I can tell, at some point in the 1990s, there was this group of gay men who would get together and they were metalheads. And like, that was sort of their subculture, which is a sidestep or a skew from sort of the queer punk culture that a lot of zines come out of.
It definitely intersects.
Yeah.
Punk and metal are adjacent.
But when I think of metalheads, I think of sort of the straight dudes who hung out in parking lots and smoked terrible menthol cigarettes and would call us faggot and like were, you know, super, super angry and, you know, anti-gay, basically.
Macho.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so this is a newsletter of guys who are super into metal, and they talk about going to big concerts and hanging out in the parking lot and smoking pot and, you know, picking up guys and like just as much as a straight metalhead would do. And so I'm super interested in sort of the juxtaposition of those two concepts.
They're kind of defying stereotypes, defining a box that some people put them in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we've got, it kind of looks like a Kiss, you know, kind of like front cover with...
The band is called Fight.
Yeah.
In here they, you know, they have barbecues. It's like any other social group except that they're metalheads and that's what brings them together. And they're, you know, they're gay dudes. It's just this super, super interesting artifact. And this is not a story that you would see in music press. Like, if you looked at music press at the time, Rolling Stone or Spin, They're not going to talk about a group of gay metalheads. And if you were to read Out Magazine or The Advocate, you know, they're not going to necessarily talk about a whole bunch of metal, especially if most of their, you know, base, the people who are buying their magazines, are interested in house music or disco or EDM or whatever. So, like, it's these stories that I feel like QZAP is really, really good at seeking out and preserving and, you know, trying to give a little bit of lift or voice to.
How much of this archive and of the zines that you have is connection to the past, to things that have, important things that have happened in history?
So zines are primary documents, and oftentimes I think that zines are made to process what's going on around you. I, like Milo, got my start in zines in the early 1990s, and for me it was definitely about, I wanted to talk about things that I wasn't seeing in the world, and or things that I was seeing that were problematic is probably much more accurate. And we respond, I think, to historical events, like whether they're things that we participate in or self-produce. Some of my favorite zines in the collection end up documenting events that I attended or that I heard about but couldn't afford to get to. And the idea that there's a record of that, that we can go back and kind of touch that, and also, too, to share that. So zines have this cross-generational power that a lot of other, I think, sort of subcultures don't. There really is, there's no age limit. I've known zinesters who are in their 70s, even when I was in my 20s. And now that I'm sort of in my early 50s, like, I'm sort of in this, you know, sort of elder position where I was making zines 25 years ago or more. And what I'm helping to do, especially through my role at QZAP, is to interpret what zines documented from that time and making it accessible to people today who didn't live through that time. In fact, a lot of the people who look at our collections or are coming to do research in zines probably weren't part of any of the movements or the events or anything from the 80s or 90s. And it's a great place for them to sort of have kind of an unvarnished look at what people felt in the moment about those events. And that's one of the, I think, most powerful. I'm a historian by my education. And to me, that's the primary documents, and the things that people create themselves to mark their own time in the world are the most powerful historical documents of all. And that's, again, what zines represent to me, at least.
So I guess my last question is, what zines have come in that you feel are going to be the zines that you turn to document what's going on today, like in 20 years or something like that? Are there any issues or any zines or any connections that you've had that are very on point with modern issues?
Yeah, we have a zine called Out, and it addresses the boycott, divest, and sanctions against Israel and Palestine. And it's written by a bunch of Jewish women here in the States. But it's really, you know, like, that's a really contemporary issue. And these queer women are taking on this in a very, very specific way. We have also, sort of from a religious perspective, we have a zine called State of the Gay at Harding University. And Harding University is a Christian religious institution of higher ed where the students who go there sign an honor code, and there are no lesbian and gay students on campus, they said with their rolling their eyes. But clearly there are. And so, you know, so we have people taking that on. We have stuff that documents queer perspectives on the immigration crisis that's happening here in the States right now, and you know, how we have this duty to stand up and say, you know, what we're doing with these kids and with these families is absolutely atrocious. And, you know, so that's getting documented in zines that we get kind of on the regular. You know, seeing this real explosion of gender in the best possible way is a real contemporary issue. You know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, some folks in the queer community were talking about trans issues, but not at all to the extent that we are now. You know, we didn't have focal points in the same way that we did. And so we're seeing that in zines. And I think that if we look back in 20 years, we'll be like, oh yeah, you know, the zine folks were doing that. And then suddenly more and more folks were doing that. And, you know, we have this really sort of rich, cool history that is existing.
So you think potentially the opening up of the trans issues and trans visibility is something that will be documented in these modern zines in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, another thing is sort of the pushback against sort of corporatization of gay pride, right? Like we see rainbow flags at Target and we see these things that are, you know, really being pushed in a certain way, and our zine history into the past and then moving forward really documents a resistance to that and a saying there are other ways of doing this where we don't have to capitulate. We don't have to necessarily participate in this very narrow vision of what an LGB, maybe T, perspective is and what our political goals are, because we all have vastly different political goals.
The work that I do outside of QZAP, I work here at the Tools Shed on the east side of Milwaukee as a sexuality educator. And that's one of the things that I see in modern zines that are documenting not only just that, you know, trans folks are here, but also sharing knowledge and a sort of talking about very personal issues around sex, sexuality, and gender. And I think this is going to help document how these topics have become much more easy to talk about. One of the earliest trans zine, queer zines in our collection, it dates from the mid-1990s. For me, it was given to me by the creators. There were two women who were performance and visual artists and filmmakers in Toronto and Montreal. And it blew my mind. It was the opening for me, the world of what being a transgender person is about. And it challenged the stereotypes and the sort of brainwashed bigotry being raised in a society that wants to suppress or negate people who are expressing gender that's outside the binary. So that, to me, is one of the marks that will remain once we are all on to other lives or not here, that these stories will be documented so that I think in the future, as people will look back to see what progress has been made, we'll be able to find these stories and know that these were people who stood up in the face of kind of the storm of bigotry and hatred and made their mark on the world.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Milo.
Thank you.
Milo Miller and Chris Wild co-founded QZAP, the Queer Zine Archive Project, and they run it from their home in River West.